Local Talk is the signature local interview program on KHOI that explores people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. It celebrates the creativity, diversity, and civic spirit of our community. This interview aired on Local Talk.
You may have noticed by now that at KHOI we are raising money, which is needed for operating this radio station. It's a crucial time of year for the station because we depend upon the support and generosity of people like you. During this time, we talk with you about money. So, what better time than this to share with you a remarkable person here at KHOI with a remarkable story about money? Aladdin Alkathiri engineers Local Talk every Wednesday and Friday morning at 7 a.m. Today, Cynthia is here, but two other days of the week, Aladdin comes in. And one day after we had completed a show, I learned that Aladdin, when he was 16, actually owned a successful restaurant. Wow. I sat down with him in the studio to record his story over the weekend, and my brother-in-law, Randy Wright, was here for the holidays from Ann Arbor, so he joined in the conversation as well. Aladdin told us his story, which is a story about success and money, and he started out by describing to us where he grew up.
I grew up in North Philadelphia, just on the south side of Temple University. It was a nice little enclave of a neighborhood because if you went any direction, you were in a whole different world where it was scary for me. But our neighborhood was kind of nice. Working class, African-American. Most of the homes were two-parent households. They all worked. And that's not, you know, the whole city you don't describe as that. Philadelphia has a lot of poor, very poor areas, and even today, some of the poorest in the country. You know, you go into a certain neighborhood and you can tell by just looking around where you are. And it was like that then, even worse. So I've always worked. I have having a newspaper route. We're at 11, huge newspaper route. I mean, I think I had everybody in the neighborhood, and I used to pull two shopping carts with newspapers. And it wasn't a lot of money. I don't remember the amount, but bought my own clothes and was able to give my mom money, and that felt good. And I had the summer jobs and things like that. But by 16, you know, I still had a little, would have a job here and there. But I wasn't really looking for opportunities. In fact, my mind and in my classmate, our minds were on wanting to be DJs, you know, the disco era. By 16, I went to a private school, went to a friend's school. Of course, this private school was a lot different from the public neighborhood school I went to, where everyone was kind of like me, I thought, at the public school. At the private school, there was so much more diversity. I wasn't exposed to that before. Different income levels, different, you know, race and even thought. It was very different from the world I grew up in. It's only 2 miles away, but it's a huge difference. And so I was really curious about everything. And there, people liked me. They liked me more than when I went to public school. I wasn't the kid who was liked. You know, wow. I was a little fat kid. And I had told jokes and kept people laughing, and I didn't get beat up. In my neighborhood, people, when we got a little money, we bought the best clothes we could find. The latest in style. Or if you had wingtip shoes, you were really. But these kids, they didn't spend their money like that. They had one pair of shoes. Dockers, I think, was the big thing back then. You know, maybe a pair of Calvin Kleins. But they wore the same bands every day. So it wasn't very, very pretentious. I didn't realize the difference until that's when I started to pay attention to it. Why was it different? And at the time, to me, it wasn't about race.
It seemed like markers of class.
It was. But at 16, I didn't know what it was. From my limited experience, I knew it was different. I spent a lot of time with other kids my age doing different stuff that we had done in our neighborhood. We went to concerts. I'd never gone to concerts. I remember we went to a concert, like six of us, and we were in this small car, a Fiat, the two-seater convertible. We were all piled in this car, but it was fun. All of the experiences were different for me, and I'm sure that's because of they had privilege that came with money. At lunchtime, we would go to lunch at a restaurant downtown. Our school was downtown, so I'm thinking, don't order more than I have in my pocket. But I noticed one of the kids got the check, and he just signed his name, and I'm thinking, wait. Like, what's that? And of course, someone else told me later, his dad owns the building. So I was amazed by that. How does that happen? How is it that they own stuff? I knew people own their homes, but not the buildings downtown.
Right.
So that's
Right.
But then I started to pay attention, not in an envious sense, just a curiosity sense. You know, how is it different?
Mm-hmm.
How is it, you know, what did they do in their lives that made them different than us?
That's the voice of Aladdin Alkathiri, who is the Wednesday and Friday morning engineer for this show, Local Talk, speaking with us this past weekend when he related his remarkable story to me and my brother-in-law, Randy Wright, whom you also hear. He has set the stage by describing where he grew up in Philadelphia, an introduction to a private school, discovering for the first time in his life class. Now let's hear what happened next.
I wasn't really looking for opportunities. In fact, my mind and in my classmate, our minds were on wanting to be DJs, you know, the disco era.
And your friend, was he from the same kind of a background as you? Or?
No. They lived outside the city, and they were wealthy. They owned buildings downtown. So we're at his house, and we're, you know, trying to learn this DJ stuff. And meanwhile, we're complaining about a restaurant we had been to earlier. And the conversation went in the direction of, if I had a restaurant, I'd do it like this. I'd do that. I'd do this. And his dad must have been listening. Came in the room. Guys, you should just do it. What? Huh? What? Both of us were like, huh? So I was 16. Like, come on, Dad. You know, no, really. Wow. Sounds like a good idea. You should do it. Before that, we really weren't thinking that specifically about it. But he just kind of stayed with us on it. He started the coaches. We didn't have any idea even where to start. And over a period of, I don't know if it was weeks or months, but we had to develop the concept. Then we got to location. Well, where would you put this restaurant? Well, downtown somewhere. Well, where? Downtown's kind of crowded. Talked about the differences of what's going on downtown. We had to go and actually scout locations. At the time, they were building a mall downtown called the Gallery. Brand new, first mall in the city of Philadelphia, and it was downtown. We went in, and he kind of coached us on the conversation to have with the manager of the mall. And of course, it was tough. Both of us were very good on the phone. Uh-huh. Chuck was good. Mm-hmm. I was good. I mean, and we did a lot of things that other kids didn't. I mean, like when there would be a concert of someone we liked, we would meet them at the airport. We met Bruce Springsteen at the airport, and we were walking through the airport with him, up close with him, taking pictures and everything. And the people in the airport, really, they thought we were with him. So we would get access to these kind of things just by effort. So maybe that had something to do with the dad saying, do it. So we're at the Gallery. I went first, and I wasn't really getting a good response. I didn't get the sense I was being taken seriously. And we talked about that. Chuck and I, you know, we were pretty straightforward, and nothing was difficult to talk about with us. And we got to the point, well, maybe you should do it, you know, because I'm black, he's white. I don't know if that had a difference, but we ended up getting a space. I don't think he took us seriously until we were able to come up with a deposit, which was, it was like 9 months. We had to pay up front.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know.
That would be very serious. Yeah.
But we didn't know. We put all of this together in our numbers because we had to figure out everything before we even talked to anybody about money. You know, the restaurant supply. And most of the supplies, it was one-time furniture, you know, tables, chairs. You know, and it's two guys. It was, okay, chair. You know. And we knew other people who were in the business, but we had to figure this out on our own. Yellow Pages.
Yellow Pages. We were wondering, how did he find all these things, you know?
Yeah. Yellow Pages.
No internet.
There was no internet. There were no cell. Right, this was 76.
Right. Yellow Pages.
Right?
That's true. That was the Google at the time.
We hired everybody. Our cooks cooked for us as part of their interview. Our first cook was an Italian guy. He was from Italy. He didn't speak a word of English.
Oh, man.
You know, and I didn't speak a word of Italian, neither did Chuck. But he could cook a hamburger. He could cook some French fries. He could cook a steak. And he cooked well. And he was very pleasant. He learned English, actually, while he worked with us. You know, so we hired everybody, the staff. And I worked up front. And there was an ice cream parlor. It was called Royal's Ice Cream Parlor and Restaurant. We had 12 flavors of ice cream. And Chuck managed the back of the house. So he managed all the kitchen staff and cooks. And I managed the wait staff and people who worked the ice cream. And so we were at the end of the hallway next to the entrance to the parking lot. On the other side of that was Gimbel's. The mall was anchored by Gimbel's. Gimbel's was the store in, you know, New York. They did the Thanksgiving Day parade for years. They did it in Philadelphia, too. So it was a really good location. Now, when we chose it, that wasn't in our heads. But we got to that, I think, through some coaching and conversation. Well, it might be a good location because of these things. Uh-huh. So we got the place. The mall opened. Of course, a new mall. It's going to be busy. The mall opened. We opened. And we did really well.
That's Aladdin Alkathiri, local talk studio engineer, who is here on Wednesdays and Fridays. And he's relating his story to me and my brother-in-law, Randy Wright. We were here in the studio over the weekend. You also hear Randy's voice. And as he's telling us about how at the age of 16, Aladdin became a successful restaurant owner, a remarkable story about growing up and money. So here's Randy commenting on Aladdin's amazing experience and asking him to explain it some more.
I've seen lots of restaurants go belly up. You know, mm-hmm. I think of people who, oh, I have a great recipe. I'll start a restaurant.
Yeah.
And they're just out piles of money and mm-hmm. burnt out and totally wrecked by the end of the experience, you know. But yours is different. And it seems to me that the primary difference is this mentor that you had.
Yeah. It's about the numbers and the plan. And so that was part of the learning process. We would go over the numbers every night with uh-huh. his father, and he would tell us what these numbers meant, what's good, what's not good, where we have to worry, all of that. So he would tell us something and give us time to think about it and respond. Mm-hmm. And this is how he would normally talk to us.
You never get rebellious?
No. No, it was our business. You know, if it was our business, if we didn't do it, it would fail. It was us fail. You know, we did the work. He pointed us in the right direction, and we got to a point where a few weeks in, or I don't know, maybe a month in or so, we were looking at the numbers again. And we were doing well, but then this one night, he hit me with, your ice cream's not making money. He said, you have to do something about that. Uh-huh. And I couldn't think of anything. I just couldn't think of, what am I going to do to get people to buy ice cream? So one day, we're out shopping, you know, some other classmates, you know, and they're looking for something else. We were in Lord & Taylor's, I remember that. And we walked past these goblets, glass dish with the long stem. And I don't know why it struck me, but it did, and I got one. And we went back to the restaurant like the next day, and I start filling it with ice cream. Fill up the bottom, put some topping on it, another layer topping. Ended up with 16 scoops of ice cream. And just like, what are you doing? You know, uh-huh. Why are you waiting? And I'm just wait. And I was finished, satisfied with what I had created. And uh-huh. I don't know where it came from. I said, Afghanistan Bananistan. Well, what's that mean? I don't care. I don't know what it means. It's a good name for an ice cream. And then we decided when someone orders this, and if they eat the whole thing alone, we'd pay for their dinner. We made a big sign uh-huh. that we hung on the wall uh-huh. behind us. Uh-huh. And when someone would order it, we'd make a lot of noise, you know. And I learned that from another place. And everybody's watching. And when we did that, folks started ordering ice cream. Every time we sold one of those, we sold a lot of ice cream. That changed everything for us. Now the front of the house is making money and the back of the house is making money. I learned something from that. You know, I guess it was marketing.
Right.
We were really business-like, but then we started really loosening up.
And having fun with it.
Having fun with it, right. You know, with a lot of young people.
Yeah. Well, I see in this Afghanistan, Bananistan, a playfulness, you know, uh-huh. kind of like a joy. And I feel like that gets really missing in lots of businesses.
Yeah. I think it was a huge experience for me.
Uh-huh.
Huge. It just made me feel like I can do anything.
There's confidence.
I think that was a big thing.
Oh, man, it's a big thing any day.
Yeah.
You were making money at 16 in your own business, which is unusual.
Yeah. Now, I had jobs, so I was used to having some money.
Uh-huh.
I never thought that I'd be determining how much. Before that, my experience was apply for a job, and the wage they offered was the wage I took. I didn't get rich from it, but on a regular basis, we were doing well, you know, that weekly, monthly, we were doing well. We knew what our bills were. You know, we paid our bills monthly. We paid our investors monthly. You know, we had a good plan. Uh-huh. We were in a good place. Our timing was good, and we did well. We didn't owe anybody any money, you know, and we sold with good timing. My grandfather had a restaurant, but I don't think his process was the same process I went through. It wasn't easy. It was a struggle. It was kind of like a lot of under-the-table stuff, not on record and cash. And I mean,
Capital to work with makes mm-hmm. a huge difference.
Yeah.
Well, what about this mentorship idea? The guy's father stepped in, and he heard you talking and heard your interest, and he decided to step in and encourage you.
Yeah.
Would you do that for
someone? Yeah. I would do it. Today, when I look back, I'm thinking he must have gotten some pleasure from it, pointing these kids in the right direction and watching them succeed. Looking back, he had time to be around. My mother worked. You know, my mom raised us. She was a single parent. She raised us by herself, five kids, and she was working. And I had uncles and, you know, other family around, but I think he had time to be around. I mean, he was available to listen to what we're talking about.
What's the most important thing that he taught you about business?
The work. It's a lot of work. There were some expressions like when you have a business, you just own a job. Another part of that was, you know, it wasn't about, I mentioned the school and there are different people with different wealth levels. You know, there was wealthy and not wealthy. But I also learned about access to money. So that's where that's lesson was huge in, because he didn't give us anything. And this business didn't change. I don't think it changed my economic class, but I learned some things about access to money.
Robert Putnam had this book called Our Kids that I read, and he talked about the segregation of neighborhoods by class that we have now. It's like everybody wants to live with people that make basically the same income they make. And in 76, people would hang out with people from other classes. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like what you're talking about was a good example of that. And it's something that we could sure use in our world today, I think.
Yeah.
It's like that kind of crossing over those boundaries of and mentoring kids.
So if you were going to mentor KHOI, what would you say to KHOI?
Okay. Well, you know, I had a conversation about that today, too, with a friend of mine. I mentioned that we're trying to raise money. Say we're about a third to our goal, about $40,000. People will pay for something they'll miss if it's gone. I know about the fun I have here. Oh. You know, I walked in and had no idea what was going on here. I saw KHOI. What are they doing? And I think that's worth a lot.
I do, too. Actually, I think that's sort of like Afghanistan, Banana Stand.
Yeah.
It's fun, and it's playful, and I think that there's a lot of that about KHOI. Mm-hmm. It is fun and playful, in addition to being valuable.
You and I usually meet each other at around 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And... you know, and I certainly know how I feel when I have to get up at the crack of dawn. Everybody's not real talkative at first.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes things kind of go haywire, right?
Right. And for me, that's the most fun time.
Right.
It's fun.
But by 8 o'clock, by the time Local Talk is done, we feel like we did something really fun, right?
Yep. And I was in here the other night, Saturday night. There were folks, you know, who had a show, and I'd never been in here at night. And I was surprised. There were people here, and they were... And it's really a lot of fun. And it's all volunteer, so no one's being forced to do anything.
And
so
a lot of times they don't. Believe me.
But it's so much. And the community aspect. I mean, that part is priceless. I mean, that goes back to when I went to the new school. It wasn't about some pride that I'm going to a private school. The community was so diverse, and I met people I just didn't know about. I just didn't know people were different from me. And when I first came to Ames in 94, this place was a lot different than it is now in terms of diversity. You know, the where the people were from, what they look like, how they think. Story County is so much different now, the diversity now. That's a good thing. And there's so many people here for different reasons. A lot of them are drawn to the university, but they come from so many places. And they're here for so many different reasons. And unless we engage them, we won't know, you know. And that's one of the values I see here. And when I talk about KHOI, that's what I talk about. Hey, you really need to come on down, because the things you care about, how do we know you care about them?
Right.
How does anyone know? And that's huge. That's worth paying for, because drawing in all of the diversity in this community, I bet there are some people out there who would love that the rest of this area or the world knew what they cared about or cared about what they care about. Bring it here. Hey, there's an opportunity for you to have a voice here. That's huge. You know, there's so much that's enjoyable here. And I think, you know, it's about people. It's about us. And mm-hmm. when a new person or another person walks in the door, it's really, I mean, I've met a lot of people just sitting here, just the people who come in and share their points of view and that are being interviewed. And it's like you said, we could use a lot more of that.
Connectedness, yes.
Yeah.
Because everybody on the surface looks so much simpler than they really are. And there's so much going on that mm-hmm. you never see until you have a reason to interview them or, mm-hmm. you know, sit down in front of a microphone. And it just kind of boggles my mind sometimes yeah. what all is happening around here.
Some of the folks who work here, I would have never met these guys. They're interesting. You know, I enjoy talking to them after uh-huh. the show, uh-huh. you know, before, during. Mm-hmm. And I would have never met them. We tend to live in our boxes.
Your restaurant in Philadelphia is a really good example demonstrating that when you allow that diversity to happen, not only do you end up having more fun, because yeah. diversity is more fun
yeah.
than anything.
Right.
It opens up the opportunity for unusual and wonderful things to happen that one would not have imagined.
Right.
And yes. it doesn't get yeah. any better than that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
So why don't we tell the people why we're here?
I'll let you do the honors.
So hi, everybody. Again, my name is Aladdin Al-Kathiri. You heard some of my story. Here's why community radio is important to me. I mentioned that this community has grown so much. It's so diverse, and everyone, every little piece of the diversity quilt should be here, letting us know who you are and why you are. And that's valuable. And we need your support. We need your financial support. So to support KHOI Radio, the easy way, call 515-292-2878 to become a member. And you can also donate by going to khoifm.org and clicking on the donate button. We thank you for your support.
Bye-bye. And in case being a member sounds scary, we're not going to come and tell you you have to do anything other than just to give us $55 or more.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Being a member is somebody who has put their money down to invest in providing working capital for mm-hmm. this station. That's what we're asking from. Of course, you're welcome to do more at the station if you'd like. But right now, becoming a member just means that you make a $55 donation or more, and you can then say, I have invested in keeping community radio in Central Iowa.
Right. Keeping the lights on.
Yeah. KHOIFM.org is where you go to make your donation. KHOIFM.org.
The return on that investment would be an investment in diversity in this community.
And all that brings, right?
Right.
Whether it brings restaurants or or just a good time yeah. and respect
or something new to do with ice cream.
Thank you, Aladdin. Thank
yeah,
you for telling
Aladdin.
Us your story.
That was great.
Appreciate it. And again, many thanks to Aladdin Al-Kathiri, our engineer for Wednesday's and Friday's local talks. Thank you for sharing your story with us, Aladdin. And I hope that his story and myself and my brother-in-law, Randy Wright, inspired you to support KHOI.
You can hear more interviews like this on Local Talk, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on 89.1 KHOI Community Radio. You can support community radio through the donate button at khoifm.org.